Final Round Radio.
Online and in your face.
Welcome to Final Round Radio, a show in which we review fights. Our first review is of UFC 57 held at Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas on February 4th, 2006.
The headlining fight of this was Liddell versus Couture number 3, the rubber match. This podcast will be based upon the pay-per-view card, not the actual official card that was taking place in Las Vegas. So we're going to start with the first card fight that was shown to us, which was a Nick Diaz versus Joe Riggs fight. Eli?
Well, Joe Riggs, previously what we've seen of him, he's just been a guy that goes out there and likes to throw blows. But today, or that day rather, he actually went out and had a game plan and stuck with it. He showed a little more skill rather than a reckless abandon for just throwing his fists out there and hoping to get a knockout somewhere. He had strikes, he knew where he wanted to put them, and he tried to go into that, you know what I'm saying?
And coming with Nick Diaz being a striker himself after knocking out Robbie Lawler with a vicious knockout in UFC 51, I believe it was, 52, that was a big knockout for him. So Nick Diaz can punch as well, and Joe Riggs deserves a win after the last three losses he's had. He needed to prove himself in the octagon, and this is his first time doing so. I also find it personally hilarious that there was a fight in the hospital afterwards in which they went to the same hospital, which they blame UFC for. They should have known better as to put the same fighters from a previous fight into the same hospital. But Nick Diaz actually threw a blow towards Joe Riggs and did a flash knockout where Joe Riggs went down. Supposedly, Joe Riggs then tried to fight back and grab the legs for a takedown, and it got broken up. Now, this gives Nick Diaz a bad persona, similar to Phil Baroni or Wes Sims, and now makes him one of the UFC's bad boys.
We're now moving on to the Jeff Monson-Brandon Lee Hinkle fight. We've previously seen Jeff Monson grapple in Abu Dhabi and Grappler's Quest. He was impressive there, taking the title in his division. And even tonight, it was more impressive to see what he did to Brandon Lee Hinkle, otherwise known as the Iron Lion. It didn't look like there was much striking going on, basically because there wasn't. Jeff Monson does not look like a striker. He may not have a lot of power, but he does not look like he has striking ability. Jeff Monson put him in, what was it, a reverse guillotine choke? And it looked pretty brutal because Brandon Lee Hinkle went out for a good second until he let go.
I was kind of disappointed. I wanted to see Jeff Monson strike, as he is a huge mofo, if you know what I mean. And I wanted to see if he had any striking ability, because he has definitely the weightlifting power and the bulk. Brandon Lee Hinkle is a striker by definition, known for striking supposedly, be able to drop bombs, but did not see much of that in that fight. Which was amazing was about that, though, I do have to give the Iron Lion credit for, was his ability to take pain and not tap. He was looking good, trying to struggle, and then his eyes rolled back and he was out. I like how he got up afterwards, didn't know what was going on, but still gave respect to Jeff Monson. And Jeff Monson acted in a way in which I was not surprised. I mean, he is a grappler, so you expect him to go in there and do what he knows, and that is grapple, take down, and punish from the ground. I was surprised that he didn't try to change positions much after he got into that north-south position, but he pulled off the reverse guillotine, if you will, or the upside-down guillotine, which was amazing. So,
right, and I think he was just staying with what was comfortable to him. I mean, he doesn't look like he's a striker. He doesn't look like he's had much striking training, but we already know that he can grapple, and he has grappled. So he went with what he knows, especially for having this be his return match to the UFC.
I would like to see his UFC debut back in UFC 26, I believe it was, which is one of the missing DVDs or videos from my collection. I know it is very hard to get the 26 all the way up until the 36 era of UFC, as they weren't published on tape. I would like to see Jeff Monson's first fight to see how he handled himself back in the cage then, if he did any striking or whatnot. I'd also like to learn more about his training techniques and if he trains for striking, or if so, with who. I know he got a lot of slack on the internet for his personal beliefs and religious beliefs, but no one really said much about his striking, so I have no idea what his striking abilities are, or if he can do damage with those strikes. Our next fight was Paul Buentello versus Gilbert Aldana. A much anticipated fight, as Paul Buentello is known for his prowess in the cage and for traveling distances to fight every single month until he was ready. He's known for quitting his job and dedicating his life to fighting. Gilbert Aldana was little known to me other than his five fights in Rage in the Cage, which were all KOs and one TKO, and his total cage time being less than 4 minutes. It was 3 minutes 40 seconds total before this fight. And with 3 minutes 40 seconds total in the cage, I wasn't expecting much from him. I know he's been compared to Cabbage as a younger and a more slimmed down version in his striking abilities. I don't know if he ever fought anybody of Paul Buentello's caliber or not.
Well, it is impressive to note that his first fight was actually Rage in the Cage 61, where he fought Herb Garcia. He won by knockout in the first 3 seconds. So, I mean, we know that this guy can hit. So, Aldana versus Buentello is going to be a striker versus a striker. And to watch this match was pretty brutal because Aldana was getting worked around the entire octagon. There were several points where Buentello had him on the ground and he was working the ribs and working the stomach. It looked like Aldana should have just given up at one point because he had nothing to offer after the first round was over. Even in the end of the first round, it just looked like he had gassed and it was over for him. Buentello did his job and he struck where he kept Aldana from effectively striking back. And kudos goes to the headhunter because he's back and he's back with the vengeance. I can't wait to see him fight some of the other big guys like Sylvia or maybe even Arlovsky at one point. Not now, but I mean soon. Maybe he'll be ready to take on Andre again.
Yeah, another interesting thing that's up with Paul Buentello is also he has an instructional line coming out of videos on how to strike. I know it's been pretty popular recently for the UFC fighters to get into that with George Rush St. Pierre coming out with his own set of instructionals on grappling and striking. And Paul Buentello has jumped on that boat also and has his own instructional on hitting that's coming out. I don't know if it's been released yet, but I know it's due out later this year.
Now we move on to Brandon the Truth Vera versus Justin Eilers. This is my favorite fight of the evening, mainly because it has the most brutal knockout of the evening. We gotta note first that Justin Eilers is a pretty tough customer. He's never had to tap out, he's never submitted, but he does have quite a few knockouts. I mean, maybe it's that he's got a soft spot on his head or something, but he...
Or a busted knee and two broken hands, yeah. And a broken jaw from Arlovsky, you know.
Yeah, we have to also note that against Arlovsky, he was laying into him and he broke both of his hands on Arlovsky's chin. So, now looking at Vera, Vera was very impressive with his kicks and knees. We got the left leg that knocked him out? The left leg was what started the stumble, and then a flying knee to the side of the head was what finished it. Also, the way Eilers landed, it kind of looked brutal. He landed with his head straight down, but his body going horizontal. So, I mean, there was cause for concern there. He may not be able to fight again, maybe from a broken neck, but he turned around and he was okay.
See, this is one of my favorite fights, not because of the actual fight itself. It was a great fight. Eilers has two big losses right before this, and this is his third big loss in a row. I don't know if UFC's going to keep his contract or not, but he is one of the remaining heavyweights, and we do need heavyweights in the UFC right now. But my favorite part of this fight is afterwards, Brennan's attitude towards the audience and towards Joe Rogan. It was a, hey, I came, where's my paycheck at? I fought. And also he had his wife there, or his future wife, his fiance, and he invited the whole UFC crowd to watch him get married that night, or the following night, with his fiance at the, I think it was the Mandalay Wedding Chapel or something, I don't honestly remember, but he was very comical in nature and very laid back and easygoing.
Right, and he remains undefeated. He's something to watch. I mean, Arlovsky better pay attention to this guy. Just for his leg striking ability alone is pretty impressive. I mean, Eilers took a few kicks, but he couldn't take the power kick to the head. So maybe Arlovsky's got a new dog in the running here?
Well, UFC is very thin in heavyweights right now, and they are looking to beef up that category, that weight class. So he is definitely a good addition, I think, to the lineup. Justin Eilers, however, I really am concerned about his... contingency to get knocked out and his contingency to lose. Right now, third fight in a row of big losses.
Right. Vera's an up-and-comer. Watch him. He's going to be impressive. I guarantee it.
He can even probably drop weight. He's at 223 right now. He can drop 20 pounds and go down to the light heavyweights and beef up that category as well, even though the light heavyweights are the dominant category right now where everyone's at in that area. But I think if he bulked up a little bit, he'd be a dominant force in the heavyweights and could definitely challenge Arlovsky.
I agree.
The next fight on the lineup is Renato Babalu Sobral and Mike Van Arsdale. This is an interesting fight as Mike Van Arsdale hasn't really shown much in the UFC yet. He is a big-time grappler known in the grappling community, has a few losses on his career, and has fought a few big guys in this UFC. Lost to Randy Couture last time. He's also fought Vanderlei Silva and some other big names, Marcelo Barbosa and so forth. Babalu, however, is the more experienced fighter of the two with a record of 27-5-0. And Babalu fought a ton of big names. Chuck Liddell, he fought Dan Henderson, Kevin Randleman, Maurice Smith. I mean, just the list goes on of his fights. And this guy's amazing. Amazing to see his record on paper. And amazing to see him fight in person. It was no really surprise that he won, but I was surprised at the way in which he won. Mike Van Arsdale being the grappler, I would think that he would come in with a better ground game, better submission and defense. But Babalu pretty easily and pretty quickly took his back and was able to submit him with a rear naked, which a grappler should have in his arsenal at least some defenses for it as well.
One of the impressive things about Babalu is he did beat Jeremy Horn by decision. And, I mean, watching this fight, it ended pretty quickly, which is sad because, like my friend here was saying, Arsdale is a grappler and he should know how to stop a simple submission like the rear naked choke. But I guess Sobral's experience came into play and he was able to quickly get on his back and make Arsdale tap
or
out.
Arsdale might be just the next Frank Trigg. For all we know. No offense against Frank Trigg. He's a great fighter, but he has some problems when it comes to the rear naked choke.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe something they both need to work on a little bit. Not to say that they won't kick my ass, because God knows they both kick my ass. But something they both have shown that they need to work on a little bit.
Also, it just seems like he has a weakness for the neck locks in particular. I mean, Randy Couture got him with the anaconda choke, and now he loses to the rear naked choke. I think if he's going to continue in the UFC, he has to work on blocking these choke submissions, because it doesn't seem like his arms and legs are coming into play. It seems like his neck is his big weak spot, and people are taking advantage of that.
And I have a theory that when you go to the UFC, you should be able to prove yourself either as a grappler or a striker or both, and so far he has done neither.
Right.
Hasn't proved himself as a striker, barely throwing any strikes, and hasn't proved himself on the ground where he's supposed to be top notch at.
Right. And next is the big return of Frank Mir versus Marcio Cruz. This was a huge disappointment, not because Frank Mir didn't try and put forth the effort. It's because he got cut quickly, and then Cruz took advantage and just strictly stuck to poking and prodding at the wound so it would bleed more. And instead of fighting, it just seemed like he was just trying to get the win rather than do the honorable thing and try and fight. Even though Frank Mir, unable to see, was still willing to fight and put forth the effort. I mean, I was hoping for something a lot more than what happened that evening.
I can't blame Marcio Cruz, because if I was fighting a big guy like Frank Mir, I would probably do the same thing if I saw the advantage. I mean, you have to take the advantages that you have, and you have to play the cards you're given. But yeah, Frank Mir came back a little bit heavier than he was last time, coming off of the motorcycle injury, the crash, which I'm told shattered his left leg. I don't know to what extent the damage was. I'm not a doctor, nor have I seen the medical reports. And I know he just got married recently as well, so a lot of stuff on his plate, and coming back after almost a year layoff did a lot for him. I mean, he came back, and to lose in such a quick manner by a cut wasn't really what we expected or what he wanted, I'm sure. But then again, like I said, I can't blame Marcio Cruz. Fighting a guy like that, you have to take the advantages, and it's, you know, you have to get the W any way possible.
Well, it was a painful 4 minutes to watch. I mean, the first start, they started off with the explosion of strikes. Then they moved to the ground, and whatever happened, it looked like his glove grazed his eye, right under his eye, and he started to bleed. They stopped the fight, and then after that, when they went back down, Cruz just kept going at the wound. Frank should have been able to cover it or something, but I mean, it was really disappointing to see that it was a lot less of a fight and a lot more of, let's see how much I can get this guy to bleed.
And you could tell that Frank Mir could not see at all and was just trying to weather the storm to get to a point where he can get it fixed. And they did have a break where they tried to get it fixed, but, you know, it just wasn't happening. The doctor called it then.
Right, I mean, it was 50 seconds till he could have had the cut man come in, and that was probably a huge, I mean, it was a huge disappointment watching. I'm sure he was really disappointed. He said so himself. He said he had to go to the gym to work off this loss. And, I mean, I can't wait to see him back in the octagon, but, I mean,
I think his character a round of applause for saying that afterwards. Most guys get mad, get pissed, and he said, you know what, I just need to go back and work on it, work it out, work through my sorrow to come back, and I hope we do see him return. And hopefully he'll come back and have a better fight than this one. Not that he didn't put forth the effort, but it just was uncomfortable circumstances.
Well, I'm going to want to see a few more fights from Frank before he goes for the title again. I mean, it was his title, and he had to give it up, but it doesn't look like maybe he's ready. He's ready mentally, but his skin may not be ready. I mean, he could be bleeding all over the place, or, you know, he may not have the right conditioning. And so maybe two more fights, maybe see him fight Buentello or somebody like that before he takes on Arlovski, because I know that was a big fight planned for this year. Then the main event of the evening, Chuck the Iceman Liddell versus Randy the Natural Couture. This is the third fight they've had, and I mean, it ended pretty much the same way the second one did. Chuck got the knockout on Couture. So, I mean, it's sad to see that Randy's retiring after this, because, I mean, he's a great fighter and his age does come into play, but, I mean, he's a guy that a lot of the people looked up to that are in this business. So the first round was pretty brutal. I mean, they went toe-to-toe for a while, and Randy actually got a takedown on Chuck, which is a rare sight to see. I mean, Chuck's pretty good at sprawling, and he has a good takedown defense. But Randy did get a takedown, and they went toe-to-toe for a while. And then, of course, the second round, it was that huge opening that Randy left, where Chuck took advantage and beat him to a bloody pulp.
And most people argue that Randy slipped. I didn't see that as a slip. I saw it more as a stutter, as if you go in for one strike and then you change your mind halfway through. His foot never went back in a slipping motion. It just stutter stepped to the right at a 45 degree, as if he changed his angle of attack at the last minute and stuttered. One thing that Chuck is good at is the takedown defense, like Elijah said. When he saw him fight Jeremy Horn this last time in UFC 54, that was a good example of the Iceman working his ground game. I mean, Jeremy Horn went in quite a few times to take him down, and Chuck kept sprawling and made Jeremy Horn fight his game standing up. He'd get him on the ground, pound him, stand up and back away, forcing Horn to stand up with him. With Couture, I saw it the same way, whereas he was keeping him in his world. If Randy could get him down and keep him down, then it would have been in Randy's favor. But it just didn't happen this time, it didn't happen last time, and it's unfortunate that Randy retired this way, even though it was speculated for the last six or seven months, and he even announced it a few times before that he was considered retiring after this fight. So it's sad to lose a great fighter like this, and the first guy to ever win two weight classes and be the champion of two different weights. So we'll see what happens with him in the future. Maybe he'll come back for an exhibition fight similar to Royce Gracie and Matt Hughes coming up in some of those fights.
Right, I do have to agree with you that it did look like mid-punch was a second guess on his part. Like, he should take the punch and then he changed his mind all of a sudden. Chuck is really good at taking advantage of opportunities that fighters leave open. So, I mean, obviously, with his flailing style of punching, he got in that punch and then followed him to the ground, and then, well, the rest is history. I have to admit, too, I am sad to see Randy Couture go. I didn't get to see a lot of his fights, but I did hear a lot about him, and I'm sure that a lot of fighters are going to use him as the comparison for years to come. I mean, this guy was something else, and Randy, we're sorry to see you go, man.
I'm sorry to say also that I thought Randy should have shot more. The whole time I was wondering why he was standing up and trying to fight Chuck's game. He was like he was trying to prove something. The first fight they had was awesome. He did prove something. He did stand toe-to-toe and make it. But after the second fight of him getting knocked out for the first time ever, I think he would have learned his lesson and went back to his ground-and-pound strategy and shot in more, and taken Chuck down, but he didn't. He seemed like he wanted to prove it again. I don't know if it's because of all the rumors on the internet about him retiring and his age or what it was exactly that caused him to think this way. But, or maybe he just couldn't. Maybe he was trying and he just didn't see an opening to shoot in. I don't know. But I know I am looking forward to future fights with him or future exhibition matches if he does have them. And I also respect the man for giving wrestling clinics and running camps out in Oregon for Team Quest. I know he's training a lot of fighters over there to fight in the cage, and they're up-and-comers, and some have been on the Ultimate Fighter television show. Some of them have been fighting in King of the Cage, Gladiator Challenge, WEC, IFC, Ring of Fire, all that kind of stuff. So I'm sure we'll see a lot more of him as a coach now, as a trainer, as a corner man, and I'm sure he won't disappear from the fight game altogether.
That would be sad to see, is him just not being involved, him cutting all ties. I mean, he has a lot to offer to this sport. And just because he's not fighting anymore doesn't mean he can't help other people. Randy, our heart goes out to you, man. We love to watch you fight, even though I didn't get to see a lot of them. Every fight I did see, I appreciated watching you fight. It was beauty in motion, man. And Chuck, here's to the champ, man.
So that wraps it up for UFC 57. Tune in next time to hear our review of UFC 54 that was released on DVD February 7th. Following that, we will have Dengue Fever, a jiu-jitsu movie put on by On The Mat.
Thank you for listening to Final Round Radio. If you have any calls or questions or anything you want to talk about, just go ahead and give us a call at 206-202-0554. We'll respond to you, chat, do a little of this, do a little of that. Thanks.
Final Round Radio. Online and in your face.